Good morning. This is Sunday, September 28th, about 11:30 a.m. We are continuing our talks from certain chapters of certain books of the Infinite Way. And this week, the book is Man Was Not Born to Cry. And the chapter is called Chapter 8, Rising Above This World. Now you're going to have to stretch. You're going to have to exercise those spiritual muscles. You're going to have to use spiritual discernment in order to hear this talk, in order to grasp its principles, and demonstrate the spirit within these principles. So, fasten your seatbelt and let's begin. In the book The Infinite Way by Joel Goldsmith, in the chapter The New Horizon, there's a paragraph that says, above this sense life, there is a universe of spirit. Above this sense life, there is a universe of spirit governed by love, peopled with children of God living in the household or temple of truth. This world, this universe, is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. In it, there is no awareness of discords or of material good. All right? And the first chapter says, the first paragraph in this chapter says, the sense which presents pictures of discord and inharmony, disease and death, is the universal mesmerism which produces the entire dream of human existence. It must be realized that the entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion, and we must rise above even good human conditions. So, there is a universe above what the senses are reporting to you. That which you can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is mesmeric dream of human existence. But above that dream is a real universe, a universe of spirit governed by love, and this world is real and permanent, and its substance is consciousness. And so, naturally, it would seem that the question would be, well, how do I rise above this false sense of universe, false sense of person? How do I rise above this false material sense of life into this spiritual universe? How do I rise above it? And that's what this chapter is called, Rising Above This World. Chapter 8, In Man Was Not Born to Cry. He begins by saying, every time we are faced with some absolute spiritual truth, we unconsciously reject it. And that's what happens. I just told you that everything you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is an illusion. And you must rise above that sense of universe into the spiritual universe, the universe not made with hands, the universe not made with thought. And unconsciously you reject that. You have to, because if you don't, then that means you look at your loved ones, those humans around you, and some part of you has to say, well, then I'm not seeing the reality of them. what I'm seeing is an illusion. And if I fear it, if I hate it, if I resent it, if even if I love it, I'm loving an illusion. And that sets up a sense of battle within you. And that's what he's saying. When we're faced with absolute spiritual truth, we unconsciously reject it. No, that can't be. In fact, we would sacrifice almost anything in the world before we would give up our cherished beliefs, our cherished concepts. Is that not what he said in that Infinite Way book in the chapter Putting on Immortality? When he said the whole work is that of changing concepts? It's an inner work? Yet we would prefer not to do that work. We would prefer to go through life as human beings. Let's admit it. This is hard. Hard work. He says, the wisdoms of the Infinite Way, those are the wisdoms written in the back of the book, contain some of this new wine that will help us sweep aside our old concepts. Every single one of these wisdoms came through revelation. Most of them by my being awakened in the middle of the night and having to get up and write down the particular wisdom that revealed itself. Well, I just had a Persia the cat jump in my lap, and we'll see if we can continue with this talk under these trying conditions. Okay. So, every single one of these wisdoms came through most in the middle of the night. He had to get up and write down the wisdom, and I've had that experience too. The study of these wisdoms can carry the student into a whole new realm of consciousness. Remember, this chapter is rising above this world. If you rise above this world, obviously you enter the realm of spirit. And so this particular chapter is going to study or present to us some of these wisdoms to study. Now, the title to this subsection, which Lorraine put here, is All Illusion is a Mental Image in Thought. And that's what we're going to, that's half of what we're going to study today, or look at, or contemplate. All illusion is a mental image in thought. That means there's no illusion out there, and that's what we're going to get into. So he says, to realize the non-power of appearances requires an understanding of the nature of error, a subject that many people do not enjoy dwelling upon or studying. As a matter of fact, however, the correct understanding of the nature of error can become our salvation, because this makes it possible to understand the allness of God. Whereas studying the allness of God without studying the nature of error would never enable us to grasp God's allness. Now, that's really a big thing with Joel, that there are two parts. And one part is knowing God is, and God is omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. But the other is understanding the nature of error. And if you have been following these talks, you know that every week, in some respect, in some capacity, in some way, we have presented that truth, that you must first know the nothingness of error before you can settle down into a quiet and receive revelation. So there's two parts, and he says if you leave the one part out, the nature of error, you will only experience the fringe the fringe. I don't want to experience the fringe of my kingdom. I want to be smack dab in the middle of it. He says, there have been spiritually illumined persons on earth who have realized that there is no death. And some who have even seen that there is no birth. Have you ever contemplated that? Have you ever looked at that? If this is a spiritual universe, who was born? Who can die? And still there are others who have recognized that there is no disease on earth and no reality to any negative appearance. Have you been able to do that? Can you look out with your eyes at earth and the peoples on earth with all of their problems? Can you see that there's no disease on earth? If you can't, then you're not in spiritual consciousness. You're in the human mind or the world mind. He says the revelation that came to Gautama the Buddha under the Bodhi tree was that all appearance is illusion. It is not reality and it is not taking place in time or space. It is taking place only in a universal mortal concept of the universe. Now that paragraph right there should be studied and dwelt upon and contemplated and meditated. Do you remember Joel saying that in the Kalua study series that he was studying the life of Buddha, of Gautama, and he came to a part where Gautama said, I must remove sin, disease, lack, limitation, and death from the world. And he says, and that gave me the whole thing. Remember? For Joel, that gave him the realization, as soon as Buddha removed it from the world, as soon as Buddha understood it wasn't out there, he became the Buddha. He had the realization, all illusion is in the false mind. And then he didn't have any illusion to conquer or get rid of, but just to see through, in order to see the underlying reality. And so that gave the whole answer to Joel. All appearance is illusion. It's not reality. It's not taking place in time or space. Do you still look out here and see people that need healing? Do you look in your own life and see problems that need healing? Do you need a little supply, a better companion, better health, improved health? If you do, then you're not practicing the principles of the infinite way in this chapter. That's why I say you're going to have to reach. He says that was Jesus' vision when he looked at Pilate and said, thou couldst have no power. Jesus was able also to see disease in its severest forms and to say, rise up, take up thy bed and walk. He was able to look at sin and dismiss it. Neither do I condemn thee. Now, says Joel, very little of that principle was understood in the years following Jesus. Although there were some deep mystics, men who had attained conscious union with God, yet in their conscious oneness with God, they did not perceive that making God responsible for the errors of the world simply intensified their reality. And we can read that in such books as I Am That by Nisargadatta, if that's how you pronounce it, where he says, yes, I'm dying of lung cancer, but that's just the karma of the body. I'm not there. I am living in the I Am. So there you have a person that has realized half of the principle. He's realize the allness of I am, but not the nothingness of karma. Karma is still a something. So it says, Joel, not until the advent of modern metaphysics was it made clear again that God is the only power, and all these appearances of discord do not have reality. But just as the teaching of the illusory nature of error was lost after the generation of Gautama the Buddha, so has it been all but lost in present-day metaphysics. Those not close to Gautama accepted the teaching that sin, disease, and death were illusions, but they believed that these illusions were externalized as form. See, now you've got something you have to get rid of. Out here, you've got karma. Well, no, I don't have to deal with karma because it's not really real, but the body sure seems to be suffering from it. However, those mystics that, like Jesus and Gautama, who have the understanding of the absolute I am-ness, and also the inner realization of the nothingness of karma and humanhood and matter, then they externalize that perfection. So, there's no duality at all. There is no duality of, well, I'm standing in the I am, but out there's karma. Okay, so he says, those not close to Gautama accepted the teaching that sin, disease, and death were illusions, but they believed that these illusions were externalized as form, and they looked upon them as something to be destroyed. And so today, diphtheria, influenza, or any other disease is considered by many metaphysicians to be an illusion, but an illusion to be removed. Originally, the meaning of the teaching of the illusory origin of disease was that even though it was called diphtheria or influenza, it was only a mental image, a nothingness, an illusion, or a mental image in thought, having no external reality, no external substance, merely an unfounded belief, a rumor. Now that's what it was called originally, and so there was great healings. But then, slowly, metaphysics and metaphysicians started to come under the same belief in good and evil, started to come back under duality. And then you had people calling and saying, I have an illusion. Will you help me get rid of it? Will you do some protective work to save me from the illusion? Now listen to this. This is very important, this paragraph. This misinterpretation of a really deep spiritual teaching goes back to the innate human nature which has accepted and lives by two powers. You see that? Instead of seeing the infinite and eternal allness of the spiritual universe, and knowing all error to be nothingness, illusion, or a false sense of something, always the human being is swinging back and forth between opposites. Alright, so we're going to get into that a little deeper. Now, he gives you the first wisdom to consider. There are no powers of evil external to yourself. Discords have no external existence. Resolve them within your own consciousness. And there you have it. Discords have no external existence. He says, when we begin to understand the nature of error as an appearance which has no concrete existence, no outline formed, or no structural existence whatsoever, when we see that it is not an externalized physical condition, but a mental image and thought existing nowhere except in our limited vision, when we see that, then we no longer battle sin, disease, and death, lack, or limitation. And through this realization, we arrive at a conviction of God's allness. You see that? You can't come into an inner conviction of omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence while you have God and this body suffering karma, or God and this human who hasn't yet realized his identity, or God and this cat, or God and this flower. No, we have to rise above the entire misinterpretation, which is the false sense of the spiritual universe and the spiritual creation and the spiritual being called the Son of God. He says, eventually this understanding leads to the ultimate realization of the reasons why there is error on earth, why it ever appeared, and what it is that perpetuates it. Now, he gives you a clue here to look at. He says, there is only one error on all the earth, and that is the fear of the loss of the little I, the fear of extinction. You see, down here, this wisdom that says, there is no such thing as my harmony, my health, or my supply. His peace passeth all understanding. His grace is sufficient. Perhaps we thought that was very poetic, but we didn't move into that wisdom to where we demonstrated it. If you have harmony or health or supply, then you've got your harmony, your health, your supply, and God somewhere. You have two. You have God, the infinite, invisible, and out here, a human. And so you're doing exactly what's perpetuating the illusion. You're placing it out here, remember? I must find a way to remove it from the world. You've got to find a way to remove a personal sense of self from out there. Move it in here where you see it as a misinterpretation of a spiritual sense of self. Then if you move it in here, you'll stop wrestling with it. You'll see you don't have to work that hard. You'll let it go, and you'll stop, and you'll wait, and you'll listen, and you'll stand stock still until God reveals the real creation, the real being, the real self. And then, in that realization, without the struggle that perpetuates the illusion in thought, that perfect being externalizes, and the two are one. The inner and the outer are one. And so, obviously, on the next page, he says, withdraw from personal consciousness as rapidly as possible. Let I die. Because, in proportion to your losing that sense of I, the errors themselves disappear. Our loss of personal sense of self reveals that there are no errors. And we're going to clarify that right now. He says, now I want you to listen. This is your cone, K-O-A-N, for the week. And because I've had some people email me and ask me what I mean by that, they have perhaps not heard of it, I'm going to give you an explanation. It says here in Wikipedia, a cone is a story, question, dialogue, or statement which is used in Zen practice to provoke the great doubt and test a student's progress in Zen practice. Well, that's one way of saying it. But my way of saying it is that when you take a cone into your meditation and meditate upon it, it should lead you to a place of no thought in which reality reveals itself. It just suddenly jumps right up and says, I am. And that was the purpose in Zen meditation, in Zen Buddhism, for the cone. It was given to the student so that they would go back to the room, meditate upon it until they had this experience. And then when they came out of the room and stood before the master could look at them and tell that they had had this experience, probably by the grin from ear to ear. All right, so here's the cone for the week. Look at this, enter into it, dwell upon it, meditate upon it. He says, without the false sense of I, where would error be? If there were no I to be sick, where would sickness be? If there were no I to sin, where would sin be? And here's your cone in this sentence. If there were no I to die, where would death be? Oh my God, that's so beautiful. Enter into this. Really look at it. Don't just think about it as you're driving down the highway. Put some time into it. Take this into your meditation. Sit down on your chair or couch or bed or floor and ask yourself, if there were no I to die, where would death be? If there were no I, where is death? Now you enter into that until you have an inner realization, not a mental concept, not a, well, hey, I figured that out, that's easy. No. You go into meditation with this cone. If there were no I to die, where is death? Until you have an inner experience that itself reveals the answer to you. So remember, we're still trying to see how to rise above this world. And this cone is designed to help you rise above a false sense of self. So, he says, error is that sense of person that believes there is an I separate and apart from God. Isaiah saw this when he said, is there a God beside me? He was saying there is only one God and therefore there can be only one I. He saw, felt, and realized no self apart from God. It is quite possible to become emotional when talking about God, he says, and be so carried away and enthralled by the beauty of it that we completely ignore the fact that we are being eaten up by, well, cancer, or poverty, or loneliness, or by a false sense of self. Even while we are voicing all these poetic truths and beauties about God. So you see what he's saying here? If you are experiencing this, well, if the illusion of a personal sense of self is tearing you up, while you're at the same time voicing these beauties about God, you're missing something. Because you're experiencing a dichotomy, is that the right word? A duality? You're experiencing a false sense of self, which is being eaten up, and also these beauties about God. So I wrote down here, the real hypnotism is a sense of self which is only in the mind. Now, only the false images in thought are destroyed. Joel says, we cannot look to God to destroy our enemies unless we accept the one enemy, a false sense of self. Truth will annihilate that without any question or doubt, but it will not leave any corpses around. God is a destroyer of the false self in thought. The principle does not correct the thing or condition, because there is no thing or condition to be corrected. There is only that false image in thought. When we speak of all forms of error as illusion, false appearance, suggestion, or temptation, it does not mean that those things exist as externalized reality. It means that they exist in our minds, which is the only place where these incorrect concepts have to be corrected. You remember in the very first chapter of the Infinite Way book where he says this entire process is correcting concepts within. That's what he was saying. There's nothing out here to fix. We do not heal. We watch God dissolve the concepts within the mind. Therefore, this wisdom says, begin your spiritual life with the understanding that all conflicts must be settled within your consciousness. And Joel says, how can they be if they exist out here, in a patient, student, or a neighbor, or yourself? It would be an impossibility to settle these conflicts if they were external. But the hope and the blessing is that they are not external. All right. He says there's no conflict that cannot be resolved within. When it is resolved within, we shall see the outer picture change. So it's all an inner work. No illusion is ever externalized. He says, is Genesis wrong when it states that God created all that was made and all that God made is good? And if you remember, in A Parenthesis in Eternity, in this chapter called Reality and Illusion, he says this, perhaps the greatest of all the Indian seers was Gautama the Buddha, whose revelation of absolute truth was so profound that while there are other revelations equal to it, there are none which have surpassed it. Because of its fruitage, his message spread like wildfire across all of India. But his teaching of Maya was misinterpreted. And that's what modern metaphysics has done. It's misinterpreted this. He says, the belief that the world is an illusion led to a do-nothing attitude, a passive acceptance of the belief of the evils conditions in the world. His followers failed to see that it is not the world that is illusion. The world is real. The illusion is in the misinterpretation of the eternal, divine, spiritual universe, which is the only universe there is, and which is here and now. This world is God's world. It is the temple of the living God. But when we see it through finite eyes and ears, what we see and hear is an illusory picture of the reality that is there. Okay, so you study this chapter if you haven't. If you don't, go get it. He's saying here, you're standing in the finished kingdom of God. You're standing in the spiritual creation, you're standing in your spiritual being. You are already above the sense world, unless you're living through the senses. And if you're living through the senses, then you're living in an illusory picture of the reality that you're standing in. So you see, it's sort of like the insane person that's living in a hospital and thinks that he is Napoleon Bonaparte or Jesus Christ. And perhaps he walks around all day with his hand in his shirt and really thinks that he's conquering the world. Or walks around thinking he can do miracles. Or perhaps a lady thinks she's Mother Teresa and she walks around trying to help the less fortunate. All in this mental asylum with a fence around it. And locked doors. Okay, I hate to break it to you. I told you you're going to have to reach. But we're supposed to be advancing students and not beginners. And as advancing students, the place comes where you either die or you don't go forward. So listen to this closely. This world is God's world. It is the temple of the living God. But when we see it with finite eyes and ears, when we see it through a personal sense of self, what we see and hear is an illusory picture of the reality that is there. The illusion is in the mind that it's falsely seeing the world. The illusion is never out in the world. An illusion cannot be externalized. An illusion is a deceptive state of thought, and it can take place within a person's mind, never outside it. With our human eyesight, we see a world changing. Young, middle-aged, old people, sick, well, poor, rich, unhappy, happy. All this is an illusory picture in the mind. But because there is only one human mind, it is an illusory picture in your mind and mine. Such a world has no externalized existence. Okay, so you can't make it any plainer than that, folks. You cannot make it any plainer than that. No illusion is ever externalized. So, why do we look out here and see people that need healing? Why do we look out here and see a president or a prime minister or a dictator that's ruining this country that we're standing in, wherever we may be? Because we are not living above the sense world in the universe of spirit, governed by love. Oh yes, we're standing in it, in our true identity. We never left, but we're not standing in it in our awareness. In our awareness, we're standing in the human mind. And he says there's one human mind, and it's also known as world mind. We live and move and have our being in world mind until we awaken to the mind which was in Christ Jesus, or to the awareness of the spiritual creation in which we are standing now. And so, when Joel studied the life of Buddha, and he saw Buddha's realization that he must remove sin, disease, death, lack, limitation from this world. And Buddha came to see that it was all Maya, illusion, in the mind and not outside of it. Then there's nothing to fight, because whatever is in the mind, which is concepts, mortal material concepts, concepts of matter, those concepts have no externalized form, no structural existence. They're illusions in the mind. What can be done about them? Nothing. Because they are nothing. They are concepts. Concepts have no externalized form, no externalized reality, no externalized structure, no external being. Concepts are internal, and they're in the mind. the sense mind. And if you see them, you too are in the sense mind. So, what are we trying to do? We're reading this chapter, Rising Above This World. And how do we do that? We do it first in our meditation. We do it a lot quicker when we can understand the nature of error and understand that no illusion is ever externalized. When we make a study of the nature of error and really come to see that it's nothingness, it has no law, no cause, no God, no externalized reality, no structure, no form, it's just nebulous thoughts, then we can drop them a lot easier, like he says in his Art of Spiritual Healing. And we can do what it says, stand in the Word. And perhaps today the Word is, Thy grace is my sufficiency. Perhaps tomorrow the Word that comes to us is, Fear not, it is all I. I am all. Perhaps the next day, the word is rest, rest, and behold, I make all things new. And perhaps the next day, the word is, I stand in the living temple. And perhaps the next day, no word comes, so we're forced to say, Father, reveal the spiritual creation, and then stand still. But slowly, and perhaps for some quickly, we come to the place we know where we no longer function through the senses. We function through seeing with spiritual discernment. In our meditation, for a moment, we catch a glimpse. Isn't that how he puts it? Yes, it is, in the New Horizon. When we come to see that the good and the bad, all of it is a dream in the mind and not outside of it, then we catch glimpses of reality. And that's what happens in our meditation. Oh, yes, there's a feeling of omnipresence, a feeling, an actual awareness, a feeling of it. And we leap into a glimpse of reality. It flows into us and we see it. It's not a thought, it's an experience. Gradually, or maybe quickly, it becomes a working part of the mind. It becomes a new consciousness. It becomes our consciousness. And now we live through this consciousness, and we're able to say with our buddy Joel, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. I finally made it. And along the way, we became willing to let go of the good human beings that we love. And we became willing to let go of the evil human beings that we don't love, don't even like. We became willing to let go of all human beings so that we might rise above the sense world into the spiritual kingdom, governed by love, peopled with children of God. Now he says here, in Rising Above This World, if we believe that sin, disease, and death are the realities of existence, and that there are those suffering from them, then we must accept sin, disease, and death for ourselves. But when we understand that they exist as a false sense of real existence, without reality, law, cause, or substance, then we annihilate them for those who come to us as friends, relatives, patients, or students, and we likewise annihilate them for ourselves because there is but one self. Okay? So, no illusion has substance out here. They exist only as images in here, in the mind. Whenever we are presented with the problems of the world, bring the realization fear is at the root of them. But only a false sense of self is trying to preserve itself. When we know that, we shall witness some remarkable healings. By understanding the basic nature of error to be a fear about a false sense of self, and that actually there is only one self, God. There is only one self, which is God, but there is a sense of self which we entertain and about which our fears develop. To recognize that we are suffering from nothing but a fear about ourselves, and then to realize that there is no such self, that's only a concept in the mind, ties up the whole nature of error in a neat little box of nothingness. So the wisdom says there is never a conflict with person or condition, but rather a false concept mentally entertained about person, thing, circumstance, or condition. Therefore, make the correction within yourself rather than attempting to change anyone or anything in the without. There we have the whole of wisdom in one short sentence, Joel says. So, do you understand that make the correction within yourself means step out of human mind, the one human mind, the one universal human mind, into the conscious awareness of truth, or the consciousness of reality, or the conscious awareness of my spiritual creation? It is a matter of stepping out of humanhood and into Christ consciousness within yourself, with eyes closed in meditation, and then later walking around with eyes open. So much so that eventually it is your permanent consciousness. Then you shall smile and see these things dissolved. He says, in this wisdom, prayer is the inner vision of harmony. This vision is attained by giving up the desire to change or improve anyone or anything. You see, the only way you can have a vision of harmony or come into spiritual awareness is, like he said in The Art of Spiritual Healing, to come to a place where you really see the nothingness and see that it's an inner human mind concept. And you should do nothing about it, except realize its nothingness and stop working on it. Stand still until this inner vision of harmony takes place. He says, you ask yourself, am I trying to change a person or condition? You ask yourself that before you sit down to meditation. This will correct us immediately and bring us back to truth. And we then begin to see, yes, that is what I've been doing. I have had a fear about this person or condition. I've been trying to change it. But if I am not supposed to change a person or condition, what am I supposed to do? And he says this brings us to another wisdom. Prayer is an awareness of that which is by seeing it, not making it so. And that's what we have a problem with. We enter the human mind in meditation. We haven't yet left the human mind. We're still in it, and in that human mind there's a sense of duality, a sense of a person with a problem. We don't see that we don't have the awareness of spiritual creation. We just have the sense of a person with a problem, and we want to change it. Subconsciously, we want to change it. And so we go about knowing all these truths with the mind, thinking that we can make it so. But we can't. We come into the awareness by seeing it. And you don't see it until, well, okay, I know we're repeating ourselves, but I think it's worth repeating. Let's look at it again as he says it in The Art of Spiritual Healing, because it's just so perfect to me. So I'm going to repeat it here. In the chapter, What Did Hinder You, from The Art of Spiritual Healing, when you really begin to comprehend that in healing you are not dealing with people as people, when you learn to eliminate them and their specific claims from your thought, and in every instance deal with the root of the problem, which is the carnal mind, nothingness, the arm of flesh, nothingness, or, as we are seeing today, mental concepts about a spiritual creation, or nothingness. He says, when you really see that, then you will find how quickly you will be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence, or the spiritual creation. You'll have a glimpse of reality. He says, this presence cannot be felt until you are free of the barrier. And the barrier is the belief in two powers, two. The barrier is the belief in something apart from God. You see that? The minute you have made the carnal mind a nothingness, you are no longer have two powers, and you can do just what it says in Scripture, rest in His Word. You can rest in the Word, waiting for the Spirit of the Lord God to be upon you. And when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism. So now listen. How do you change this concept? How do you rise above this concept? You don't. You simply recognize it's a concept, a nothingness. And then you rest in the Word. And when you rest in the Word and wait for the Spirit, when it comes, it breaks the concept. It dissolves the concept. It breaks the hypnotism. These are all words to describe the same experience. The stone is cut out of the mountain without hands. Or, the stone is cut out of the mountain. The realization comes out of consciousness without thought. You see it? You see it? The weapon against error, or offense and defense, is something that is neither physical nor mental. No action, no words, no thoughts, only the awareness of God. And so there you have it. I can't put it any better. That is so beautiful, so perfect. That is the inner experience of how these concepts are dissolved by an awareness which comes to you. You don't make it. So again, he says here, in Rising Above This World, a man was not born to cry. Prayer is an awareness of that which is by seeing it, not making it so. He says, harmony is brought about through an inner capacity to see the perfected man or universe of God. And this is not possible through the senses. We have to go beyond the thinking mind into that inner soul capacity, that silence where spiritual reality is revealed to us. It is revealed to us already existent in spite of any appearance. We do not create it. It is revealed to us. So you see, stop trying to make something happen and develop the consciousness of a beholder. Read that chapter again in the contemplative life if you need to. He says, to pray is to become aware of the harmony without a mental effort on your part. And that is so hard to really learn. I mean, it takes a while. Well, for most of us, some of us fall into it. But for me, it was a struggle because I had to learn, how do I make an effort to be effortless? And yet that's what we do. We go into our meditation and we make an effort to become effortless. Eventually we find it. Eventually we have that inner experience where the concept is dissolved. Reality reveals itself and we have that, oh, yes, God is. And then we go for a while, and how did that happen? How did I do that? You didn't do it, but you struggle and you go on some more and have some more meditation. And then the next one comes. And eventually we come to see, oh, okay, we're not changing anything. We're not changing anything. Person comes to me with a problem, and if I immediately go to work for that person, I've lost it right there. I've got to leave the person outside the temple. This is a concept in thought. There's no person out there. Rather than leave them outside the temple, let's put it the way Buddha did. I've got to remove that person from the world. From the spiritual creation, I've got to say, wait a minute, this is a concept in thought. I'm not going to change it, fix it, improve it. I don't want to do anything with it. It has no structural existence, no reality. That's why it's an illusion. And so I drop it. Now, Father, what is here? What is really here? Show me the spiritual creation. Reveal thyself. And let me be quiet and wait upon the Lord. And maybe nothing happens that time. But maybe in an hour something does, or in a day something does. And then maybe 20 minutes later it happens again, or maybe 2 days later. Gradually or quickly, I'm developing the consciousness of a beholder, which is Christ. Christ beholds God in action. So he says here, harmony in our experience already exists. The important point is to become aware of it. And we become aware of it, first of all, by realizing that the persons or conditions with which we are confronted are not what they appear to be. That which is made is not made of that which doth appear. No, it's a spiritual creation. Therefore, instead of trying to change them, we go within to become acquainted with the reality. You see? See that? Isn't it beautiful? The best way to do that is not to think about the person or condition, but to think about God. And the moment we become acquainted with God, a miracle happens. We know our patient. We know him face to face. We know who he really is and what he is and what makes him what he is, for the simple reason that having become aware of God, we have become aware of all that constitutes our patient. That which is our patient or student really and truly is God manifested. But the eyes will not testify to this, and neither will the hearing, taste, touch, or smell. But in that inner chamber of our being, we come face to face with God. We shall find that we have come face to face with the Son of God. God the Father and God the Son are one. So he says, in this wisdom, prayer is the absence of desire in the recognition of is. Let's look at that one more time. The absence of desire in the recognition of is. He says in the New Horizon, above the sense life, there is a universe of spirit governed by love, peopled with children of God, living in the household or temple of truth. This world is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. And so that's the awareness of is. But we have to, as he says in this wisdom, experience the absence of desire. And how can you do that if you have persons and conditions that need healing? Well, he says the first glimpse of reality of the soul realm, which is the universe of spirit governed by love, comes with the recognition and realization of the fact that all temporal conditions and experiences are products of self-hypnotism, with the realization that the entire human scene is good as well as its evil is illusion and a concept and thought. Come the first glimpse and taste of the world of God's creation and of the sons of God who inhabit this spiritual kingdom. So, you see how it all ties together? You see how it's one experience, and he's telling us over and over and over again what must take place, and it takes many of us years and years to hear it. Because, as we started in the very beginning of this chapter saying, we unconsciously reject it when we first hear it. What? You mean it's all just an illusion? And it's not out there? It's an illusion in the mind? And I'm living in that mind? Just as Napoleon is living in that false mind? The one that's locked up that thinks he's Napoleon? Well, I'm locked up thinking I'm a human being standing in a human world. And I'm locked up in the mind. Until I rise above the mind into the spiritual creation and drop that mind that is seeing duality and catch the first glimpse of reality, the spiritual creation, the temple of the living God in which I am standing now as a spiritual being. All right, so he says, having become aware of God, we have become aware of all that constitutes our patient. That which is our patient or student really and truly is God manifested. God the Father and God the Son are one. So, prayer is the absence of desire in the recognition of is. You have no desire to change anything anymore because you have awareness of is. And when you have awareness of is, there's nothing to change. So, he says, in your prayer, asking for illumination, for light, asking for realization of God, asking, praying for it, knowing it, or even sometimes demanding it is okay. It's right. Because when we are asking or even demanding, we are really just demanding that the obstruction in our own thought be removed. We are demanding that our own sense of ignorance be removed. We are really talking to ourselves. What we are really praying for is that our false sense of self be removed. Because that's what's blocking our way to seeing the spiritual creation. And that's important to know, because sometimes, and I've been there many times over the years, I can get so frustrated with being in this mental box and knowing I'm in it and wanting to rise above this world or step above this sense world into the spiritual universe. I can get so frustrated that it becomes a battle, and you get nowhere with that. But nevertheless, sometimes you beg and plead and demand, and you tear your hair out. And a day or two goes by, and you accidentally rest, have a moment of rest from the battle, and boom, you have the spiritual awareness. You catch another glimpse. And then you go, oh, yeah, that's right, that's how it works. And slowly you become the Son of God, which is that one which has the consciousness of a beholder. He says, be sure that your prayer is not an attempt to influence God. We could all spend a year on that one sentence with profit. If we were to stand and watch ourselves when we are praying and meditating, would we not find a little trace of an attempt to influence God, and sometimes more than a little trace? Yes. If you're trying to move God to fix something, then you are still in that human mind. I see that we're almost out of time, but we only have another page, so this should work just fine. This wisdom says, have no desires in the world. Let God's grace suffice. And that, of course, has to do with a surrender of a personal sense of self that needs something or wants something in the awareness of God's grace happening. This wisdom says, there is an insight in man that visions through all appearances. Yes, that's your spiritual faculty, spiritual discernment. And that is the goal. That is the achievement of spiritual consciousness. When we rise to that place in consciousness where we see with inner vision, we will see through all appearances or mental concepts. And that's what he did. And he says it will reveal the harmony necessary. And again, remember, he said in the Hawaii Hotel talks, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. So Joel says he made it into this new consciousness that sees through concepts in the mind, because there aren't any out here, sees through concepts in the mind to the spiritual creation out here. Out here and in here are one spiritual creation. Above all, he says, is to live only as I. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. It's not necessary to use any power. I am the way, and there is no other way than I. To live as this consciousness brings the kingdom of God to earth. All right, and he says, failure is when we consciously or unconsciously try to influence spirit to change matter or to change people. Okay, so we've got to get out of that mind which sees people or matter that needs changing. And unfortunately, you cannot let go of just the evil. The good has to go too. You cannot see good matter or good people. You cannot see bad matter or bad people. It's not easy to stop seeing people, but you will make it. And he says, true prayer brings a change of consciousness. Yes. Yes. It brings that consciousness that lives as a beholder, beholding God in action, as he says in the Kailua Study Series. Keep your conversation in heaven. Keep your prayer anchored in God and in spiritual truth. Let your daily prayer be a part of your tithing, giving back to God of your first fruits. Yes, so all of us should practice daily giving our first fruits in prayer to God, which means we look at perhaps our family to begin with and later the world and have a prayer first for them. And we do that by recognizing that these pictures are concepts and I don't have to fight them. I don't have to change them. No, I don't have to flap my arms to fly. I don't have to work that hard. I can rest. I can rest in the Word that God is. And if I really see that there are no people or concepts out here, and if I really see that these are concepts in the human mind, the one human mind, the world mind, they have no substance or reality, then I'll stop fighting. I'll stand still. I'll stand in the consciousness of a beholder. I'll stand in Christ's consciousness, which beholds the Father doing the work. And the work is maintaining and sustaining its perfect spiritual creation. And in that consciousness, which has both parts of the equation, which sees the nothingness of this world and beholds the allness of spiritual reality of my kingdom, of the spiritual creation, in that consciousness, God itself appears as earth, and the two are one, and my kingdom and this world are one, and perfection reveals itself as an ever-present reality. And that is the consciousness of Christ. So I invite all of you to join me in this walk. It's not easy. No, it's not easy, but the basic principles are simple. And we can practice them until we have that first glimpse of reality. And then the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, on into, well, how does he put it in the Kahlua study series? We reach the point where this consciousness itself takes over our existence and lives itself. And now Christ is again on earth. That's what I invite you to, that feast. Thank you.